Hello and welcome back to Thank You to Creations podcast. My name is Elle, and joining me today, I have my co-host, Colors.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I think I'm nearing the end of the day brain fog, to be honest. You know, after you've been using your brain all day, especially like in between so many different tasks, I feel like around this time is when your brain is like, no more, we're done.
It's starting to shut down. It's like in a standby.
But what's crazy is like, if I wanted to go work out right now, I kid you not, I could go work out, but my brain wants to go to sleep. My eyes are like, it's time to go to bed.
Did
you ever get that?
Yeah. I actually like your sweater, by the way. I wanted to say that I love your sweater.
You're being biased because it's your sweater that you made.
It's my sweater. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so what's our topic for today?
It's actually going to be a mix of two of my favorite things, and that is the paranormal and crime. So if I'm not watching a scary movie, I'm usually watching some kind of crime documentary. You kind of know that about myself. Before I go to sleep sometimes, I either watch the scariest things on YouTube or the most chilling, gut-wrenching, bloodiest murders on YouTube. It's just what makes me sleepy.
You know, we're so different because you know that I don't like gory stuff. And you, man, every time you watch those the killings crime. And all that, the crime, I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, damn, I'm going to die one of these days.
I'm not going to kill you. I'm like, Lord, don't say that.
And I'm like, she's just covering. She's learning.
No, I'm not. I'm not taking notes. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Today, for this paranormal crime episode, I have two cases. There's a lot of similarities, and the biggest similarity for these cases that went to court is going to be that the Warren, so the couple, the Warrens, paranormal investigators were involved in both cases. I'm sure if you are a fan of the Conjuring movies or the Warrens, or you've been to their museum, or if you read any other books, you're familiar with these cases. If you're not, we're going to talk a little bit about each, and then kind of see, you know, what your thoughts are. There's so many different things out there. There's podcasts, there's books, there's movies, all kinds of interviews on YouTube. But the two cases we're talking about is going to be the trial of the Amityville murders, which happened in 1975, October 14, 1975. And this was the case of Ronald DeFeo Jr., who was accused of killing his parents and four siblings in their Amityville home in New York. And the house itself was later said to be haunted, served as an inspiration for the Amityville horror book and movies. So this one, I feel like it's been everywhere. The first time I ever saw the Amityville home was actually a movie with Ryan Reynolds. I don't know if you've seen that one before.
I probably, but I'm Ryan Reynolds. Is you talking about Amityville?
Yeah, like that was one of his first movies. Like, we're not maybe one of his first ones. One of the first ones I saw was he played the dad or something. Yeah,
probably. Yeah, like I said, I'm not too big of fans of these types of movies. I like scary movies. But,
it is a scary movie.
I understand it, but I don't when I watch a scary movie, I'm just gonna go ahead and watch it. I don't recall much of it, and if they start killing people, and I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. So go ahead.
Okay. So it's said that on the evening of November 13, 1974, Ronald Butch DeFeo Jr. entered an Amityville bar and told his parents had been shot inside their home. Several bar patrons accompanied DeFeo back to his family home at 112 Ocean Avenue, where a man named Joe Jesuit called Suffolk Country Police to report the crime. When the officers arrived, they found the bodies of Ronald DeFeo Sr., age 43, his wife Louise, 42, and their children, Don, 18, Allison, 13, Mark, 11, and John, 9. The victims had been shot dead in their beds, and Ronald DeFeo Jr., who was 22, initially tried to say the murders were a mob hit. However, by the next day, he confessed to committing the crimes himself. So the actual killings were November 13, 1974, and he went to trial on October 14, 1975.
Oh, okay.
So it took a while, right?
Now, yeah, all the evidence and everything. Yeah, I can see that.
Exactly. So what makes this paranormal is that about a year later or so, the DeFeo house was sold to George Lutz, who moved in with his wife and three children in December of 1975. That wasn't even that long ago, like far in between.
Yeah. You didn't even have thought.
No, and then what's crazy, like, I wonder the realtor had to disclose that somebody died there.
You know what? I don't think they do. I don't think they disclose that because it will it lowers the value of the house. You remember when we bought our first house, I think I asked the realtor, like, hey, did somebody die here? And you know me, just asking random questions, and I'm sure he said I can't discuss that or something like that, but
maybe there has to be a clause. Right. Okay. So the new owners resided in the house for 28 days before they fled, claiming it was haunted by the spirits of the DeFeo family. Critics accused George Lutz of concocting the story, basically making up the story to make money, but he maintained he was telling the truth. And in 1977, Jay Anson published a novel titled The Amityville Horror. The book became a bestseller and inspired a 1979 movie of the same name, as well as a 2005 remake. So I'm sure that 2005 remake is the one of Ryan Reynolds. Okay. But so the family was initially killed, another family moves in, and then this family says they're being haunted by the previous one that died. First of all, one of the biggest things for me when I first learned about the case itself was that nobody heard anything. And which means, like, there were how many members? There were seven members.
Five, right?
It was 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, six. And then with the son was seven, but there was six people in this home. And by the time he shot the second person, you would think that the other three would get up and run and hide or
wake up.
Yeah, and exactly, wake up and notice something, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems like everybody was sleeping.
I mean, if he drugged them beforehand,
yeah,
that's the only thing I can think of. Like, taking out the paranormal part of it, if you, mm-hmm, let's say we are having dinner and, you know, mom makes like a dope horchata and shit, and, you know, you put that little powder in there, whatever, some pills, and you let it go, be like, oh, I don't want any. And then they drink it, they all go to sleep. Yeah, I can see that. I can, you know, they're all going to be passed out. Nothing's going to get them up. But in the paranormal side of it, the devil is like, hey, just stay down.
You see, you came up with this whole horchata situation quite quickly, yet you're afraid of me.
I mean, we don't, it's not the soda, you know, you know, when you open the soda, it's going to be like,
are you nervous?
You know, it's
are
a fresh.
I'm going to be happy, yeah, to care for you.
You stay away from me, okay?
No, I'm kidding. I'll bring my own water.
I'll drink my own water. But yeah, I can see, you know, I can see both. I'm skeptical, but not really. I'm like suspicious, but I'm a little stitious, you know, like I'm not suspicious, but I am a little stitious. So I'm in like, you know, a border.
Yeah, there was an episode, or not an episode, it was like a short podcast series. I'm sure you can find it like on Apple Podcasts or maybe even CastBox. But it was just about the trial of this case, like just a trial version. Because I think at some point, Butch, right, Ronald DeFeo Jr. said that he would hear voices or he would see things in the house. And this was the 22-year-old that killed the family. So there was certain talk about that, but I think it led more into like he wasn't mentally well. Like that's really what it came down to. But that podcast, like it was, I don't know, maybe six to eight episodes, was really well made. And I want to say one of the Wahlberg brothers actually narrated, like, you know, the podcast. I want to say it was Donnie. I don't remember which one, but it's good. You know, I recommend someone to look that, or, you know, look it up. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to go to the second one. Now, this one actually went to the Connecticut Superior Court. This was the case of The Devil Made Me Do It and the trial of Arnie Johnson. Now, this is the first known court case in the United States in which the defense sought to prove innocence based upon the claim of demonic possession and denial of personal responsibility for the crime. So if you look this up within the Supreme Court of Connecticut, it was, that's what it says. It says the verdict was found guilty of first degree manslaughter. And what happened was that Arnie Johnson was accused of convicting first degree manslaughter for the killing of his landlord, Alan Bono. They were drinking, you know, and he basically stabbed him, I believe is what happened. And it was the first time that they were trying to use this reason for his defense. And they involved the warrants in this because expertise in the paranormal, demonic possession, and whatnot.
So I have a question. So when it comes to that, I feel like in the verdict, there must be, do you believe that there, everybody in, you know, in the courtroom, even the judge or the verdict, are they also religious, or are there actual people that are, you know, they don't believe in anything? They just believe in the facts. So do you believe that it was in 19, what was it? What was the year?
1981. That's when he was convicted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, there had to be somebody that is not religious, right? I mean, there had to be somebody in there that's mm-hmm. like questioning, okay, how did this become a case of demonic possession in a Supreme Court? You know, how did it all begin? Because you have to have some kind of evidence.
Exactly.
So who decided and said, hey, go ahead.
I think it had to do with what they were saying, like, you know, the girlfriend was there. So it happened in 1981, February 16th. Looks like Arnie called in to his job, called in sick, and joined his girlfriend, Debbie, at the kennel where she worked, along with his sister, Wanda, and Debbie's 9-year-old cousin, Mary. So Bono, like I said, was the couple's landlord and the employer of the kennel. Like it was his kennel. He bought the group lunch at a local bar and then proceeded to drink heavily. After lunch, the group returned to the kennel.
Debbie then took the
girls. Debbie then took the girls to get pizza, but insisted they return quickly because it seems like she started to feel like something was wrong. When they returned, Bono was intoxicated at this point, became agitated. Everyone left the room at Debbie's urging, except Bono, who seized mm-hmm. Mary and refused to let go. So it looks like he physically grabbed one of the girls. Now, Johnson, or Arnie, headed back to the apartment and ordered Bono to release Mary. Wanda recounted the following events to the police. Mary ran for the car as Debbie attempted to mitigate the situation by standing between the two men. Wanda tried in vain to pull Arnie away. Arnie, growling like an animal, then drew a 5-inch pocket knife and stabbed Bono repeatedly. Bono died several hours later. So it seemed like he suffered 4 or 5 tremendous wounds, mostly to his chest, and one that stretched from his stomach to the base of his heart. He immediately was taken into custody. And then, of course, a day after the killing, Lorraine Warren informed the Brookfield police that Johnson was possessed when the crime was committed. So she's the one that called the police basically to tell them that he was possessed based on what the girlfriend said she saw before the incident happened.
Oh, okay, okay. So I guess the warrants were a big part of the case, right? When it came, with evidence. I mean, yeah, if you've seen the movies, I mean, based off whatever the warrants, they had to prove that they had some kind of spiritual right. or demonic possession in order for them to be like, all right, this person needs an exorcism. But in this case, they need to come out with evidence that he was possessed.
Exactly. And it does seem like they did petition the Catholic Church to have a formal exorcism. I don't know how they would have done that if he was already in custody, but it's intense, honestly, because you imagine he didn't win the case, right? Because he was found guilty of first degree manslaughter. He was sentenced to 10 to 20 years, but he only served 5 for good behavior. And apparently it doesn't seem like there's anything else that came about him. Like he didn't go killing another person. It was like a one-time incident. So then it leads you to be like, well, was he really possessed or what? Was it a one-time thing?
Did he really hate his family?
Or the landlord, but you know, can you imagine if they would have said, okay, not guilty based on demonic possession. And then all these other killers came behind him saying the same thing.
You know what? There has to be that has to be a big part of the reason why they said, you know, he was convicted as like he did it. Because of that, because there's a lot of copycats and there's a lot of your lawyer can just be like, look, there was a case back in the day, 19, whatever. And this happened, it seems similar. So, you know, this is the reason why my client should not go to jail. Now, there was another thing I was going to talk about earlier, because you did hit the topic about it. Mental health issues, mental health. Majority of the cases that you hear or you see about demonic possessions are mental health issues, mental health. Is a big problem when it comes to this. So could he have some kind of mental health issue before he went to jail? I mean, did he have treatment in jail?
Exactly.
That he became, you know, was like, okay, I messed up. You know, really, really bad. So I'm sure I'm not going to do it again. And has he done it again? We don't know. I mean, you know, you're talking about the 80s. A lot of things happened. The 70s, where people used to leave their doors open. So, you know, a lot of things come into play when it comes to this type of arguments about paranormal crime, because you just never know. It could be mental health. It could be a actual demonic possession, which is something that honestly is yet to be found evidence on exactly what is a demonic possession. I don't really know what it is, but I mean, I would like to know.
I mean, I didn't find anything about him, committing any other crimes. However, I just can't imagine if they would have actually taken it seriously in this case and been like, yeah, it was a demonic possession. And then later on, we start saying, oh, it was a ghost that stole your purse. And the only thing I can really think about is like, there's a movie, I think it's, what is it called? Split. It's a guy with multiple personalities.
I love that movie.
Where he says, it wasn't me, it was Patricia. That's what he says, because it's one of his like alters, right? So can you imagine that? How do you handle a situation where the client, right, or the person who's being accused of something has multiple personalities? The defendant, it wasn't them, was it? Right?
No. So how do you handle that? Mm-hmm. Mentally is not. Physically it was, because they all live in one physical body. mentally that person is not there. But I mean, I could say the same thing, like, hey, it wasn't me, it was my other half. Right. You know? So it goes back to the same thing. I'm actually glad that they found him guilty. Why? Because he did kill somebody. You know, that's just pure just evidence. Reality. Just you went ahead and you killed somebody, you're gonna go to jail. Boom. The fact that they fought it with a, you know, paranormal point of view, it's interesting. It's interesting because the witnesses have seen something. The witnesses have actually known this person for a minute. And it doesn't seem to be any kind of health, mental issues in there. So who knows? Who knows what happened? Like I said, I'm glad that he went to jail because he did do something. But at the same time, it's like, if he was possessed, I'm sorry that happened to you, because that's pretty bad. I wouldn't want to go through that and try to explain to somebody and be like, it wasn't me. It was somebody else. Someone took my body. It's creepy. And going back to the Amityville thing, I've actually researched it myself, and I've seen some crazy pictures on the internet about when the cops came into the house, and they start, you know, they take pictures of everything. They take pictures of the wall, wherever the blood was at. And there's pictures about some of the kids that were there in the stairs. And there was nobody there, supposedly, because they were dead. And there were some pictures about some kids lurking in the stairs looking at you. That creeps me out. Because that's physical evidence from the law. You know, they're not going to be like, oh, let's go look for a ghost. No, they're going to document what happened after the killing. So seeing something like that is just like, wow. How do you explain that?
And it wasn't the only case, right? This is like the two cases, but there was a third one I recall that had to do with the Warrens. This was a case out of, I think, New England or England. They went like to Europe, basically, right? And this was one of their movies as well that was made. Now, that case, if you recall, they also had police evidence. Right. They also had police. Yes. They also had police evidence because the mom called. There was something going on. The police go up there and they saw what she was seeing, you know, the paranormal encounter. So there, it wasn't the only case that had some kind of police report. It is.
Right.
It is,
yeah, I feel like when the police is involved and the police don't know exactly what is going on, I think you can call it paranormal at that point. But when the police has arrived after everything has happened and you're like, damn, who do I believe? Because it's like you always taught me, it's about, you told me this before, it's 3 points of views, I guess, right? Mine, yours, and the truth. And I mean, and if the police can't figure it out,
exactly, you know,
at that point I'll be like, all right, that's pretty paranormal. That is pretty scary.
I think we're gonna go ahead and do a part 2 on this, because I'm curious to see if there are any other maybe lesser known cases where maybe there was some kind of paranormal, supernatural evidence or something in the case. I'm sure it was dismissed once it got to court, right? But I'm curious to see if there's anything else that maybe isn't so media frenzy like these two cases.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Something that didn't get so much attention.
Oh, exactly.
That'd be cool. Hopefully we'll find something.
Yeah. I think that'd be nice. Yeah. And today to our audience, we apologize for any outside noise. We have 4 dogs and we're currently in a living situation where there's not a lot of space. So we're trying our best. So we apologize if we do hear them.
Yeah, those are my babies. So I'm sorry. They are babies. So, you know, they're going to do whatever they can to get the attention. So
we apologize. Awesome. any last minute thoughts,
though? No, I think this is a great episode, honestly. it really worked my mind into something. You know, like I said, I'm paranormalish and I'm not paranormalish. So that's what we're going to call it, paranormalish. Crime-ish. I mean, I see crime all the time because of you, because you watch all your videos. But when it comes to paranormal, it's something you have to think about and be really respectful about it, and as well as like kind of criticize and be like, come on, man, you really killed this person, and you're really trying to tell me, it's a hard topic, but I think it is, it's a scary topic at the same time, because someone could just really get away with it, and exactly. In a sense of like, they're just like, oh, I'm mentally ill, but they're really not. I mean, if you kill somebody, you're mentally ill. If you kill somebody out of joy, you're mentally ill, period.
Well, guys, there you have it. I think we're going to do a part two, so be on the lookout for that. Otherwise, we want to thank you once more for joining us for another episode of the Keep the Creations podcast. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye-bye now.